Usually when we picture a society collapsing, we imagine invading armies. But what if the collapse is signed into law with a smile and, I don't know, a taxpayer-funded hotel room?
Right. Yeah, that is exactly the premise here.
Yeah, so welcome to this deep dive. Today we're stepping into the highly polarized world of Dick Steele's near-future dystopian novel, Phaethon's Chariot. And just a quick heads up to you listening, this is an incredibly politically charged text.
Oh, absolutely. It is very polarized.
Right, so our mission today isn't to endorse its politics or, take sides or anything like that. We're just here to jump in and impartially map out how this dystopian machinery actually works in the book.
Exactly, just exploring the concepts.
Okay, let's unpack this. The title itself is a huge clue, right?
Yeah, the Phaethon myth. It really serves as the psychological blueprint for the entire novel.
Because Phaethon is the kid in Greek mythology who begs to drive the sun chariot, completely loses control, and just scorches the earth.
Right, so handing over the chariot here represents a government voluntarily giving the reins of its entire civilization to an invading ideology. They are completely blind to the fact that the new drivers will inevitably crash it.
So the setting is the year 2032 in a place the book calls New Britain. But I'm sort of struggling with how the takeover actually happens. Like, how does a leader, Prime Minister Queer Barmy, convinces an entire populace to just surrender their culture?
Well, what's fascinating here is the mechanism of that surrender. Barmy weaponizes the concept of compassion.
Wait, weaponizes compassion. How does that work?
Yeah, so it's not enforced by military squads initially. It's enforced by social blackmail. The state demands submission to what they term the Chislamic movement.
The Chislamic movement.
Right, which the author presents as this bizarre dystopian alliance between radical religious fundamentalism and authoritarian state control, basically to easily pacify the masses.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and to enforce this, history is literally painted over. Nelson's Column is torn down to make way for migrant monuments. Centuries-old pubs are legally forced to operate as alcohol-free Unity cafes.
That is wild. It feels like a societal autoimmune disease. It's like a computer's firewall being reprogrammed to attack its own operating system while actively downloading malware.
Yeah, simply because the malware is labeled vulnerable, right?
Exactly. But so, what does this all mean for the citizens? Like, how do you police a system based on forced empathy?
Well, you end up with the novel's terrifying two-tier justice system. The law no longer focuses on the crime. It actually focuses on the identity of the person committing it.
Oh, I see. So the state actively protects perpetrators of physical violence if they belong to a protected ideological class.
Right, while criminalizing native citizens for so-called emotional violence.
And this is where we see those horrific inciting incidents in the book. A 15-year-old girl named Emily Cartwright is brutally assaulted, and the attacker just walks free into a taxpayer-funded hotel.
Yeah, because a judge claims cultural sensitivities.
Unbelievable. Meanwhile, historian Dr. Eleanor Voss gets thrown into a prison re-education center just for reading the Phaethon myth to kids. I mean, the psychological control here is crazy. They've basically made reality illegal.
They have. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, pushing people that far outside of reality forces a severe blowback.
The resistance, right?
Exactly. That cultural erasure gives rise to the before party. It's this underground resistance formed by the people who remember life before the ideology took root.
Led by ex-Special Forces operative Rupert Blue and former MI6 agent Alex Thorne.
Right, and they don't just grab guns. They realize they have to break the illusion first. So they wage an information war.
By hacking the state, right?
Yeah, their cyber espionage units hack the government to expose the hidden compassion budgets. They broadcast irrefutable proof that native pensioners are freezing to death in their apartments.
While billions of taxpayer pounds are secretly funneled into luxury five-star hotels with heated pools to house the regime's favored groups.
Exactly. They basically show the public the receipts.
But that exposure triggers the climax, and the stakes escalate from cultural suppression to an apocalyptic threat. Imam Khalid al-Rashid's network isn't content with just controlling pubs and statues.
No, they infiltrate the Faslane naval base, and the prime minister is so paralyzed by the fear of being labeled intolerant that the government refuses to intervene.
So al-Rashid's operatives are literally weeks away from hijacking Vanguard-class submarines.
Right. Their plan is a nuclear jihad against the United States.
Handing over the nuclear codes because you're afraid of a bad PR cycle. Again, it is the ultimate paradox of tolerance, being so open-minded that your civilization detonates.
It really is. It highlights how the weaponization of compassion doesn't just destroy culture, it neutralizes a nation's basic survival instinct. Hard power is surrendered because the defense mechanisms have just been shamed out of existence.
Yeah, and here's where it gets really interesting for you, the listener. Dystopian fiction is fundamentally a funhouse mirror.
Oh, for sure. It takes those anxieties and just amplifies them.
Right, like the exhaustion of information overload, fears about unequal policing, the way empathy is often used to manipulate us online. It dials them up to 100 to show us the absolute logical extreme of our current political discourse.
Right, and this raises an important question to end on. We've talked about a society policing its own history into oblivion to maintain emotional safety. But think about our relationship with technology today.
Oh, that's an interesting parallel.
Right. As we increasingly rely on algorithms that actively filter out uncomfortable truths to keep us safe and engaged, are we unknowingly building the infrastructure for that exact kind of tyranny simply because it's convenient?
Outsourcing our critical thinking to code that prioritizes comfort over reality. That is definitely something to mull over the next time your feed demands the reins.